And we are live. Welcome, folks, to Monday, October the 20th, 2025. This is episode 3749. And today's show is actually a remake of a show I did all the way back in about 2018. I believe it was 2018 or 2017. Exact same title. I'm even using mostly the same bullet points for today's presentation. Of course, it will be different because, 8 years have gone by since then? But every once in a while, I like to take something that was kind of a big hit in the past and redo it for the modern day. And we've been around long enough that we actually have, you know, shows that can be redone for the modern day. That's kind of crazy when you think about it. But 17 years will do that for you. And that's where we're headed, 17 years. As we go into next summer, we'll be officially at 17 years. I think 17 or 18. I'm not even sure now. 17. Let's just say it's 17. Anyway, we're going to talk about that again, dropping the denominator. Mr. Law said, oh, no, math. Well, you know, math does involve thinking and critical process and stuff like that. And that is kind of what we're going to be talking about today. But when I say the drop the denominator, I'm not talking about that horrible fractions part of your mathematical upbringing in like middle school or grade early, like late grade school, where you had to learn how to do math with fractions by finding the common denominator. Notice this, dropping the denominator. I mean, it is getting rid of it. It means lowering the lowest common denominator in society. Okay, now here's another way to think about this. This was actually an appropriate use of this concept to a degree. When I was in the Army, when we would run PT, we would run at the speed of the slowest man in formation. Now, the reality was that wasn't necessarily true. That means that we ran at the speed of the slowest man in the formation who was at least running at a speed that made it worth running. Okay, so there were people that dropped out of the formation, but generally you took a guy that was kind of slow and steady and good enough to, you know, hit the baseline of what was acceptable for running speed, and you put him at the front of the formation, and then the formation was held to his pace, and if you can't keep up with that, then you really suck and out you go. Now imagine this. Imagine if the Army, instead of saying, hey, we have a shitload of soldiers that are kind of rotund and bouncing along here with man moves going up and down while they run, and they're falling out of formation. What we should do is find a slower person to put at the head of the formation instead of a baseline, lowest level of acceptable performance person to put there. Well, that would be a problem. That's society as a whole today. We are continuing to reduce the minimum level of what is considered acceptable, and we're doing it in a variety of ways. This show, actually, the very first time I did it all the way back in the day, right, came from discussions with Nurse Amy and Dr. Bones. When I did this show originally, I had just come back from one of our trips to Sanibel, Florida, and I think Bones and Amy were in town with us for like 3 or 4 of those days. And Bones and I always talk at an intellectual level. Sometimes we even get an argument. Sometimes I even get his boomer ass so riled up he starts yelling and screaming. It's hilarious. But we get along more than we don't with subjects like this, and we kind of challenge each other intellectually. And during some of those discussions, you know, we got into how, like, that's not a thing anymore, and you can't have a disagreement or even one person get all heated and yell a little bit, and let's go grab a beer and just get along. And it's because the denominator is being lowered, and such was the genesis of the show. So we're going to be talking about today how, you know, it's a phrase that you hear, like dropping the denominator or the lowest common denominator as an analogy outside of mathematics. The United States and our performance metrics and basic intelligence, critical thinking, ability to use thought, logic, and reason, that is what's in decline. And I dare I say it's been in decline for at least 50 years, probably longer, but I've been around a little over 50 years. And I have to say that I feel like every decade of my life, if I break it up into 5.5 decades now, every decade, the people around me seem to be stupider than they were the decade before. I'd love to just believe that's, well, Jack, that's you doing what you teach people and becoming more and more intelligent, learning more and more, and being more and more skilled. And because of that, it seems like the average is dumber. Yeah, I'm not that good. No, the average is absolutely dumber than it was. And including people who weren't stupid 40 years ago are stupid today. It's a brain rot. But this is not something that is just the decay of civilization. This is not just, you know, a failure of one or two institutions. This is, in my opinion, a designed and orchestrated destruction of Western civilization. And the reason I say it's designed is because it works too perfectly. A lot of people take me to task because I'm not into organized religion, but I'm also not an atheist. I believe that there is some sort of creative force, some sort of God. The best terminology for what I am is a deist. And they're like, well, why, if you don't believe in anybody's particular theism, then why don't you just say, I have not seen it? Be agnostic, right, to the question, which I'm also agnostic, right? Gnosticism and agnosticism mean knowing or not knowing. Theism and atheism are believing or not believing. Yeah. Well, the reason is because when I look at not just biology on this planet, but the entire structure of the universe, everything's too perfect. And when everything is designed to perfection, well, that kind of shows you that you have a designer. Now, as much as chaos can be perfection, as much as stupidity can be designed into perfection, as much as the decay and rot of the human mind can be designed into perfection, it has been. So I don't trust that it's just the natural consequence of society and its cycles. This is by design. And we're going to go through today some specific ways people have been dumbed down, and then being a show that likes to focus on solutions, we will go through a series of bullet points on what you can do to defend yourself against this. And more importantly, for younger folks with kids, help them build shields against this. Because that's really the only thing you can do. You're not going to fix it. You're not going to fix how effed up these people are. You're not going to do it. It's not going to happen. You are not going to live in the golden age being promised to you by the orange man. There won't be a golden age. Not of a renewing of intellectuality, right? Not in people not being stupid anymore. You know, if you think that any of this shit's new, it's the same playbook's been running for 50 years. It's just every year it actually gets more effective because it's the, think of it like wearing down the defense in a football game, right? If you can keep your offense on the field, even if you don't really, really score a lot of points, but you can keep your offense on the field long duration in football. By the time you get to that fourth quarter, the defense on the other side, because they're the ones having to do the resisting, it takes more effort to resist than to go forward. They're gassed. They're just worn out. And that's where you see a lot of football games. The game looks tight, but you look at time of possession and you look at all the metrics and you just know this game is not as close as it looks. And by the time we get into the fourth quarter, you're going to start to see a spread, not just in performance, but in points, right? The defense of the human psychology has been worn out for decades now. And as always, I say 50 years, 50-ish years, because it goes back to when 1971, 1971, 1 year before I came into existence, they decoupled us from the last of the gold standard. That's not about the gold standard being better or whatever. It's the power of fiat in the hands of government, and that government being the most powerful and most technologically advanced government and most sophisticated government from a PSYOP standpoint that has ever existed, and then marrying it to that power. But again, none of this is new. In a way, even though I'm saying it's not cyclical, it is cyclical. It's just cyclical by design of the sociopaths in charge. Because you want to know, fiat being all powerful and all masterful and controlling a society, go back to the Khans. Yeah, like as in, you know, Mongolia, the Khans. The Khans had fiat. It was the first big time real use outside of clothing for silk. They made notes. Kublai had notes. Printed money out of thin air, but he got value into it by saying a couple things. One, we'll take it as tax. And two, we'll buy your shit with it. And the Khans amassed massive wealth. It's how they dominated so much of the world for so long. They took the fiat and they bought the assets with the fiat. When the, you know, when people had surpluses of anything that was durable and valuable across time, and there was too much of it to help with pricing and keep everybody afloat, the government just bought up all the surplus at a good price. and amassed it in massive storehouses of wealth. Sound familiar to you? Sound familiar to you? Yeah. It's by design, but the blueprint that the designers are using today has been modified for the modern day, but it's ancient. Think of it like somebody designing an airplane that's never seen an airplane before, but they have all the technology available today using drawings from Leonardo da Vinci, except that would actually be noble. This is actually destructive. That's what we're talking about today. I heard someone say in the, well, didn't hear, I read someone in the comments said, I like Angry Monday Jack or something like that. I guess that will be a little bit of this. Because if this doesn't make you angry, you should check yourself to see if you have a soul. Anyway, before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason at usaberkeyfilters.com. Jeff has been with this show almost as long as this show has been a thing. I mean, we have worked with Jeff since 2009. So you do the math on that, 16 years, 15 years, something like that. That's a long-ass time to do business with somebody in the world of podcasting. He's a great dude, and Berkey water filtration systems are awesome. But Jeff actually just reached out today, and I don't have this for you yet, but I bet you I'll have it for you by tomorrow or the next day at the latest. He's also just picked up a contract with the reusable canning lids, and he's going to do a discount for MSB members of 25% off just that individual product on top of what he already does for MSB members. So great guy and always looking to bring more value to the table. That's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I love Jeff. Next up today, JM Bullion. I am a Bitcoin bull, you know that, but I'm also never been the guy that is into, you know, one thing and not diversifying your investments. Silver and gold have a multi-thousand year history of being a thing of value used as money and monetary instruments and having other uses as well. JM Bullion is the place to get your precious metal, and the reason is simple. One, they sponsor, or the reasons are simple. They sponsor the show that you love. Two, they have done it for 13 freaking years. They have been a sponsor. They give you a discount on your purchases once a month if you purchase monthly. In fact, you can purchase however you want, but you get to use the discount code once a month. They stay in touch with us. They just updated some stuff for us. They are not kind of a show up, throw up, and leave kind of sponsor. They're actually part of this community. And they have better prices than, you know, Monex and Lear Capital and places like that. And I can talk to the owner of the company. That is why you should be getting your precious metals from JM Bullion. And, you know, there's a lot of people right now, they're asking me, is it time to ape into silver and gold? Well, since they're at all-time highs, I'm going to say no. So then they say, well, is it time to not buy silver and gold? And I say, no. The way that you buy these assets, the same way I recommend you buy Bitcoin, slow and steady across time. That is the way to go. All right. With that, let's go ahead and dig on into this and start out with, like, where did this all come from? And I'm not going to say the drug companies did it, but they're certainly a part of it. But the drug company formula for commercials is everything you need to know. It's everything you need to know about dumbing down society. But I'm gonna even bring it down a little bit more than that with, like, just a macro understanding. Back in the early 2000s, this was about 06, 04, somewhere in there, and I was deep in the world of marketing as a professional at that point, so I paid attention to stuff like this. There was a big meeting of, like, all the Madison Avenue marketing firms, the biggest of the big, the ones that are all competitors trying to kill each other, but they're actually all cooperating with each other. You know, if Rico was real, that type of thing. And they had this meeting. I got an F-35. Wow. You guys hear that? I can barely hear myself over that. If you guys don't hear that on the microphone, I give it a second. They know when I'm talking like this. They send them all the time, like right over my house. Anyway, these firms got together, and yeah, Mick says that was close. Yeah, they're gonna strafe me someday, you know. Anyway, they got together and they made a decision. And you can literally go back and look at advertising, let's say prior to Y2K, and let's say 2006 and later. So I'm sure that we've got the bifurcation point there. And you can see it split. The deal that was made is we will all keep our advertising marketing messages down to the eighth grade level. They had all figured out that it basically worked better on people because people are stupid. And if you treat them stupid, they behave stupidly, like spending money they don't have to buy things they don't need. But nobody wanted to be the only one doing it. So they came to this kind of cabal moment where they all agreed, like, hey, like a mafia family, like, you got your territory, we got our territory. We got some skirmishes right here in the middle, but hey, we'll all get along, and you guys do the heroin, and we do the coke, and you know how it works, right? You guys stay on your side of the city, we'll stay on our side, but everybody, we're going to do the same thing we always did. We're just going to do it a little bit different. Everybody put their mafia rings together, and so be it. And that's what happened. And you can't look at any place where advertising happens and see this more than the formula used by every drug manufacturer for every new drug ever. First off, realize that you never see a drug commercial like, I had this disease. I talked to my doctor and she prescribed me XYZ pill. I took it for a week and now I'm cured. And I don't ever have to take it again. Yay me. No, no. Every fucking drug that you see advertised the way that I'm about to describe it is a chronic disease drug, many for chronic diseases that weren't only not chronic, they didn't fucking exist 50 years ago. They weren't here. We didn't have them. More on that in a bit. But the formula is always the same, right? Some very sad thing, some very sad disease, diabetes, stage 47, cancer, whatever, right? But happy music. Right? Maybe it starts out a little bit sad. Oh, I was mopey and I had depression. And then, and then like the music comes up and it's a 90s or 80s pop song, or maybe even a 70s for a few of them. But somewhere in that 30 years area, it's like a happy pop song jingle remix. Yeah? And then you get a bunch of fat people in the middle of a fucking supermarket line dancing while they're shoving hoagies up their fucking ass. But their A1C is down, or some other nonsense, the purple pill, non-24, whatever, and then ask your doctor today. AstraZeneca can help you if you can't afford your first dose. The first one's free, right? This is nonsense. This is not how you market a disease to a serious illness to serious people, right? This is not, it should not even be legal behavior, but this nonsensical formula has been replicated in every space. And this is the danger with pattern recognition. Once you have it, you'll be fucking bored. I'm telling you, you look at everything, you're like, oh, that's just like that, which is just like that. Oh, shit. They're doing it to this now. But that's your overriding understanding of every way that people in this society, and it doesn't, if it's politics and you're polarizing them to left or right, it doesn't matter which side they go to. They just want you polarized. What they do not want is you getting along together, discussing problems together, looking for solutions together, and actually realizing what your actual problems are. They don't want that. They want somebody over here going, fucking die if you can't survive yourself, and you want people over here going, give me free shit or I'll die. That is the divide they've created, and they use the same formula. It may not look the same, but it is the same. Stupid fucking phrases being chanted by stupid fucking people that don't even know the phrase that they're talking, you know, what it means, and people using words they cannot define. The No Kings retards are out this week. We're promoting fascism. Guy with a microphone walks up, not confrontational, says, oh, you're promoting fascism. Can you explain to me what fascism is so the people that listen to my show can understand it? It's Republicans. Okay, but what do they do that makes them, you're a fascist, and they run away. Or some other stupid shit. And don't think you can't find people on the right that are just as fucking stupid. They have no idea what the meaning of the words are. Right? Just like the people in the listening to the pharmaceutical commercial, they don't know what the fucking words mean. They just know the doctor said they have that, and this fat lady is happy, and maybe I could be a happy fat lady too. That's how simple it is. And they're marketing everything this way. Here's some specific ways. Number one, people have been taught following the rules is more important than the results you get. Now, I don't mean like, don't cross the street without looking both ways before you do. I don't mean if you catch on fire, don't stop, drop, and roll, right? I don't mean those rules. I don't mean the pragmatic fucking rules that the universe has for you. Like, if you jump off a fucking building, no matter what you chant before you do it, splat. I don't mean that. I don't mean don't rob people, don't steal from people, don't beat people up, don't destroy. I don't mean those rules. So that we're not misunderstood. Another way to describe this would be the method is more important than the results. This is the kid that goes to school. He doesn't want to be an engineer. The math he's required to take, he can do all the math, but he doesn't do it the way that the teacher tells him to in the order of steps, and he gets a 75 or lower, right? He can fail if he doesn't follow the method at all, even with 100% right answers. And some other retard kid can come in there, and he can get all the wrong answers, but if he does all the steps correctly, he can get a D. No shit. That's how it works. But it's not just that. You have to go to college. Well, why? Well, because you'll make more money. But I'm going to do what my brother did. He's making more money than my other brother who went to college. Well, it's not that simple. It actually is. What does that person want to do? It's in every situation where people have something they're supposed to conform to. You look at COVID, you got to wear a mask. It doesn't work. Here's proof that it doesn't work. Shut up and do it because you got to comply. It's the same shit. You have to get the vaccine. Why? It stops infection and spread. Well, here's the same person that told you that, admitting that it doesn't. You still have to do it, right? It doesn't matter what the results are. It matters that you do what you're told to do, the way that you're told to do it, and more importantly, in the way that others expect of you. You cannot have a society of innovators and critical thinkers when you have a society full of conformists. And even your nonconformists all look the same. You know, if you go to any of these Antifa rallies or anything, which would be a mistake, just watch them on TV. All these fucking people that are nonconformists look exactly the fucking same. Every fucking woman has fucking dyed hair. They all have some sort of damage done to their hair so it doesn't look good. Intentional damage, right? They all have a septum piercing in their nose. They all look the fucking same. How in the fuck is this nonconformity when you're all conforming to some new standard that you all agreed to without even knowing you did it? Because you're that stupid, right? There's nothing unique. There's nothing original. There's nothing new. Nothing these people are doing is actually original or unique. It's all the same shit recycled, right? So following the rules is more important than results. Next is everything's become a labeled illness. Let's think of pharmaceuticals for a minute, right? Everything's an illness, a disorder, a condition. Oh, and it's celebrated. Right. This person has like 27 mental illnesses. That's so wonderful. She's inspirational. She's stunning and brave. Right. You know, people are fat. Instead of just saying, hey, you're fat, you need to eat less food. Oh, she has obesity, but yet she is healthy at any size and she is succeeding. With a little Wegovy, she'll be perfect, even though she'll be, fat, but she won't be as fat. She'll be able to move a little bit more. That's all we really need. Right? People that are naturally defiant, right? That just don't comply and go along. They're ADD, they're ADHD, they have defiant disorder. Everything has a fucking name. Nothing is just, hey, this person's an asshole. This person's a hard ass. This person is very, very compassionate to the point of harming themselves. They're a little bit too emotionally weak. They need somebody around them to look out for them so that that their compassion actually has value to society instead of them being a victim. No. They have some sort of mood disorder, right? Everything's a disorder. Everything has a label. This person can't sleep. Well, it's not because they have a bunch of shit on their mind and can't pay their bills. They have non-24 disorder or some other shit they come up with. If they can label it, they can medicate it. There's a pill for every ill. Okay? And that's the whole point. If you think any of this is about helping anybody except stockholders, right, and direct boards of directors and CEOs and bottom lines, if you think anything is being done that way to benefit anything other than those things, you don't understand what's going on, right? You do not understand. If I can name it, I can submit paperwork to the FDA, and I can buy the people at the FDA that look at it saying yes, and I can make a pill for a penny, and I can put it on the market for $100, a pill, and the insurance company will get it for $10 and think you're getting a great deal. And I can print freaking more money than God has. So what we've done is not only take these quirky personalities, sometimes legitimate mental illnesses, and rename them into something in these treatment, right, instead of just, hey, knock this shit off. It's amazing to me, right? All these kids with ADD today, right? ADD, they can't sit down. They can't do their work, whatever. I don't know about you guys. I'm not that old, right? I'm half a century old. When I was a kid in the 80s, if you pulled some shit in school, your ass was in a sling fast. It might have got whacked with a paddle. Not necessarily a lot, but it was possible. If you were a rowdy little freaking brat, you know, young man, when you were up in that 12, 13, 14, where even like a 12-year-old kid can be a lot bigger than a female teacher, and you bowed up on a teacher, that teacher walked out the fucking door. 5 fucking minutes or less later, a big-ass teacher guy came in that room and had a conversation with you, and son of a bitch, you sat down and did your fucking work, didn't you? If nothing else, you did sit down and shut the fuck up. What happened to that? We're going to medicate it now. A lot more money in medicating it than fixing it. Now, at the same time that we have given everything a mental disorder name, when a lot of times it's just a person being a dick or an asshole or needing some help, we have taken legitimate mental disorders and we have made them normal. And in fact, we have lionized them. Man, if you really want to be admired today, be a half Thai, half black, transsexual, non-binary with a learning disability, right? I mean, you're just stunning and brave just by being that. Your existence makes you stunning and brave. You got to be kidding me. But that's where we are. So not only do we have people with mental disorders being treated as normal and being elevated. What happens when you elevate something? When you lionize something? You know, when I was a kid, nobody wanted to be a single mom. There were plenty of them, but nobody wanted to be one. And nobody was like, oh my God, she's a single mom. She's amazing. They're like, poor woman, she's a single mom. We should help her out. We should do what we can. Daddy government wasn't quite as involved yet. Right? So people were like, oh, Mary's a single mom. Maybe she needs some help. I know next door neighbor, you know, the wife told her husband, Bill, why don't you go over to Mary's house, mow her lawn for her once a week? Like it's a small front yard. Just mow her lawn for her when you mow our lawn. Oh, okay. And you know, the mom went over to talk to Mary. Hey, you know, I know you're working because you got kids. Like, why don't you, like, you can leave the kid after school. Your kids can hang out with my kids. No, that's all gone, right? No, but now the single mom is a heroine, right? She's a hero that doesn't wear a cape. When you elevate something and you enable it, you get more of it. So, no, I'm not picking on single moms here at all. I'm just saying, like, it's not an ideal position to be in. That's what makes it hard. So instead of doing things we could to help minimize it, and I'm not talking about shaming them or some shit, like, because that did happen. I'm just saying what we should be doing is aiding them at the neighborhood level and helping them and making sure there's visibility into that struggle to the children in that neighborhood as well. Make them part of the solution, but it also reinforces to them this is really not ideal. But now every celebrity's a single mom, right? Oh, look at her. She's amazing. She pulls it all off. She has a staff of people that do everything from cook her food to wipe her fucking ass. She isn't doing anything. And all of a sudden, all her kids are transsexuals or whatever. This is nonsense. How can you have a functioning society degrade this badly? Ask yourself that as we keep going, right? Then the next is the goal of modern medicine is to medicate every person from cradle to grave. One of the biggest sectors in the economy of the world, not just the United States, is pharmaceuticals. Okay? It is one of the largest markets in the world. The only things that's bigger than pharmaceuticals are things that everybody actually needs. Food, energy, right? Food, you take food and energy out, and then financials, which is just random bullshit all lumped together under the umbrella term. You take those out, the biggest industry in the world is pharmaceuticals. Okay, so what is the point supposed to be of a pharmaceutical drug? You get sick, they give you a drug, you get better. That's the way we still market it that way, even though it's a drug you're going to take for the rest of your life. The next time a doctor talks to you about taking a pill, ask this question: how long will I take this pill? If it's an antibiotic, it'll be like a week. Maybe 10 days, you know, if it's for any sort of acute thing, the answer will have a time limit. 90% of the drugs your doctor will discuss with you now will be, well, for the rest of your life, you have a disease. What disease do I have? type 2 diabetes. That is not an acute disease. It is a chronic condition. It is caused by lifestyle. Instead of addressing the problem, here's an ill, therefore there's a pill that matches it. You can't have a society function like this. It can't work. Kevin here says the number three killer in the country is medical misdiagnosis. I would say overall it is medical errors, and that's all things. It's misdiagnosis. It is side effects of medic. When you put it all together, it is the third leading, but it's not just misdiagnosis. It's often correct diagnosis, correct drug, still kills the person. If it's often correct diagnosis, surgery without an error, person still dies, right? There are medical errors, and when you lump it all together into medical treatment gone wrong, it is the third leading cause of death in the world. From the industry that says, we are here to save you. Yeah. But the goal is to medicate every person. Is get them on a drug as early as possible and keep them there for their entire life, because it's the only way they can grow now. Have you ever, this is going to sound unrelated, but it'll make sense if you give me a second here. Have you ever thought about why it is so hard to inflate gold? We can mine more gold in a year now than we could have dreamed of mining 200 years ago. Right now, we produce more gold per year than could be produced 200 years ago. Especially if you write out things like the gold was already mined and refined, and then, like, you know, people came to the New World and stole it from other people that already had it. That created an inflation spike, you know, in the 1500s, 1600s. But that wasn't really mining new gold. That was taking gold that somebody else already put, like two societies were separated. One found the other, took their gold back to their society. Have you ever thought about why gold inflates at approximately 2% per annual? No matter how good we get at mining it. The reason is very simple. It's not corn or wheat. It doesn't sit, you know, if you leave it sit in a silo, you can store wheat and corn for years. But eventually, rot and mold and mouse decay, and it goes away. It's only so durable. Gold is literally indestructible. The only way to get rid of gold is to put it back in the ground, which is where it was before we found it in the first place. If you melt it, it re-solidifies into gold. It stays gold. You smash it, whatever, it can always go back to being an ounce of gold, can always go back to being an ounce of gold. So the supply has been stockpiled by humanity for so long that the amount needed to inflate it by more than 2% of its current value goes up every year. So no matter how much you take out of the ground, you can't ever catch up to the existing supply from an inflation standpoint. It's not that we don't have endless gold. It's that the commodity itself has a basically, as long as there is an earth, that gold will be. Until the sun gets a big, turns into a big red, angry, giant, freaking growing, explosive, you know, goes from hydrogen to helium, there will be gold. And even then, it will still exist somewhere. It will end up in a comet somewhere and end up on another planet or something. Like, it will never go away. That is why we can't inflate it. So what does that have to do with the idea that medicating every person from cradle to grave is how the medical industry works? And it's that once you medicate enough people, you can't grow as an entity anymore. Because all the giant entities have all the people who actually need medicine already there. And if you're only growing by 2% in our society, which is about, you know, the target rate of inflation, it's basically a death sentence. Companies need to be growing 15, 20% per year. You can only raise prices so much on your existing market. Right, and even when the prices look really high, in the end, the insurance company's paying 90% of the bills. They've already negotiated and locked it in. So the only thing you can do is create more customers or sell more product to the existing customer. That's how you cheat the reverse clamp of inflation. They need to produce 15% more product every year. So it becomes imperative that we put people on this cycle earlier and earlier. I know if I can get you on a drug for the rest of your life by the time you're in middle school, it's going to be really easy to add one by the time you're in college. It's going to be super easy to add one by the time you're 30 to 40 and your cholesterol's through the roof and you need a statin or something. And I'm going to keep you on those three drugs forever. And I know as you age, they'll cause side effects. Your lifestyle will cause side effects. There'll be more chronic conditions. I can keep adding to it. So if we only took the approach of treating the conditions that actually warrant medication, the pharmaceutical companies could never get this big. And if they ever did get this big, they could never grow. It is the exact same scenario that is in gold. And that's why I said pattern recognition is a bitch, because everything becomes boring. Next up, food is toxic. We have toxic food. We are the most advanced society that has ever existed that we know of anyway. I'm not saying there couldn't have been some Atlantis society that was, you know, better than we can imagine, like the Jetsons or something. I don't believe it, but I'll say if it is, we don't know about it. I think the advanced societies prior to the cataclysm around the Younger Dryas existed. I don't think they were anywhere near as advanced as we are. Okay? But in recorded history, there has never been a society more technologically advanced than our current society. And as every way wealth can be measured, just from the standpoint of the ability of the average person to be relatively comfortable during their life and relatively safe during their life, we have never had more wealth. So the most advanced and wealthy society ever to exist, and if you live in America, you live in the country that's a top of that pyramid, whether you believe it or not. I'm sorry, it's true. And our food's toxic. It's not just not good for us. It's not just we're eating things that humans really shouldn't eat. It's literally toxic. There was a test done about 12 years ago. Urinalysis. And they specifically targeted people who had eaten nothing but organic food. Not necessarily vegetarians. But people who have never eaten anything but organic food, you know, for the last 10 years. All of them had glyphosate in their urine. Let me say that again. All of them. So they're eating food that at least, if you do everything you can, should have never had glyphosate touch it. You can't feed Roundup Ready soy that's been sprayed with glyphosate to a chicken and call it organic. Not legally, anyway. They couldn't find anybody. The researchers that did this experiment or this study went very far with it. They started trying to find like people that live up in the, like literally the mountain man dude that lives up on the mountain, grows all his own food. Remote indigenous people, glyphosate in their urine. Never seen a soybean, never seen a freaking modern grown piece of corn in their life, glyphosate in their urine. So what do you think that means for the person that buys their food at Kroger or Publix? Right? Or Albertsons or whatever. What do you think that it buys regular food, even better quality food? They live a very primal paleo lifestyle, or they're vegetarian and they even do try to like stay mostly organic. What do you think that means? If the dude that lives in the middle of the mountain that has a plow like fucking Grizzly Adams and grows his own corn and shoots deer, right? He has glyphosate in his urine. What do you think that means about now do it with every other fucking forever chemical we have? Because at least glyphosate's not a forever chemical. As bad as it is, it has about a 6-month half-life if it's like UV. Will kill it. It'll destroy it. It'll break it down to nothing. You know, when you start getting into some other things like atrazine and 2,4-D and stuff like that, you get things that have much longer half-lives. And some of these chemicals we have in our food supply now are forever. Most of our farms, just from the freaking fertilizers, the fields themselves are radioactive at this point. It's low-level radiation, but it is significantly higher than it should be where you're growing your food. Don't tell me that doesn't have an effect on the mental capacity of society. They're able to eat as much as they want super cheap. Oh, Jack, it's not cheap. Have you look at the price of ramen noodles. Look at the price of the food the average person eats. Relative to energy in versus energy out to acquire the money, it's cheap. Now, it's not cheap as in it really has a high cost. It's being subsidized on the back end with taxes, and it has a huge health cost. But when it comes down to it, if you're going to eat Rice Krispie treats, You can get your 2,000, 2,500 calories a day like for pennies. I'm sorry, you can. But that food has no nutritional value, and it has lots of toxins in it, pure toxins. Cancer rates are higher than they've ever been. Every chronic disease that we have, every disease remotely lifestyle related, even if it's only partially, has exploded since, when did you guess it? 1971. People have been convinced education credentials equal intelligence. I really love this thing. I think I put it on the air. I'm not sure. I know I shared it on social media. I found it about right around a year ago. It was one of these like game show type shows where they bring people together, but like an internet based one, you know, and it's not really a game. It's more like a social experiment. So they take these five people and everybody talks about who they are. And the one girl's like, I have two PhDs and I worked in the drug industry and I did this and I have a master's in that and blah, blah, blah. And I'm only 31 years old and just so full of herself. And then there was like a quiet young Asian kid. He ended up being the smartest one out of them. There was a couple other people. And then there was a dude that was enlisted in the Marine Corps. He was 22 years old and he was like a Lance Corporal or Corporal in the Marine Corps. And they had everybody talk about who they are and, you know, explain their life and why they made the decisions they did and all. And then everybody was supposed to guess, including themselves, who would be the smartest. Well, of course, the one with the double PhD and all her bullshit, and she just looked like the pain in the ass bitch that she was, ranked herself at the top. Funny thing was, everybody, except the Asian kid and the Marine, also ranked her at the top. Then, after everybody showed their ass, they said, we're going to have everybody sit down and take an IQ test. The one with the big mouth and the big degrees was like a 101 IQ. That's not stupid, but it ain't real smart neither. The smartest person, nobody's surprised that just follows pattern recognition, was the quiet Asian guy. He clocked in at like a 145. That's legit considered genius. Mensa is like 132, 133. That's a society for the top 2%. So the Asian kid clocked in the 140s. The Marine, 139. He was the one everybody ranked lowest. And he clocked 139. Also legitimate credentialed genius. The other two were like in the 120s, 110s. It was really interesting to see that. I had to see this girl's face. And then they start this shit about, well, IQ scores don't really show. Yeah. Especially when you have PhD, so you're familiar with the methodology of test taking. Yeah, they're a pretty good indicator. And this is not like a 5-point spread here. This is like a 40-point spread. I'll put it in perspective for you. A person with a 60 IQ is barely functional. The average IQ is 100. That's a 40-point spread. Now go 40 points the other way. This was a dramatic difference in the ability to understand and to learn. What IQ doesn't measure is what you know. It measures your ability to learn. It was a really fascinating. If I can find it, I'll add it to the show notes later. If somebody could find it and pop it over to me, that would be great. Please do that by email. If you do it in the chat, I probably won't see it, or I won't be able to find it when we get there. But we have been convinced of that, right? That if the person has a PhD or they're a doctor or they have a master's degree or they went to this particular school, they must be smart. I'm just going to tell you that Kamala Harris has a very prestigious law degree. You do the math yourself from there about smart, because that woman is dumber than a fence post. I'm sorry. She's an idiot. She's a very successful idiot, but she's an idiot. Having a degree does not make you smart. Having a credential does not make you smart. Knowing how to do shit is what makes you smart. And knowing how to learn how to do shit makes you smart. Pattern recognition has a lot to do with IQ as well. Because when you have pattern recognition, you can look at something that's not, and this is in the chat right now, they're talking about it, so I'm saying it. You can look at something that you haven't seen before, but you can still understand it because you recognize the pattern. Here's an example. Patrick Roarman, smart guy. He's our knife expert, knife and edged weapon expert on the expert council. Been around forever. Makes beautiful gorgeous artwork, craftsman level knives, you know. He told me one time he had a, I don't know if it was at a dentist's office or a medical office or somewhere, they had an x-ray machine that was broken. He figured out how to fix it. This guy's another profession, he's a lineman, right? So he knows about electricity and all, how not to get zapped, but a lineman is not a guy that knows how to fix things. But he had learned how to fix, I don't remember what it was. It was like a copying machine or something that he had learned how to fix because he had to for some reason. And then when he looked at the x-ray machine, he was able to feel like, this is how this all probably works, and this looks like there's a problem here. And next thing you know, he's got this doctor or dentist x-ray machine working. He saved him thousands of bucks because the x-ray repairman would have been expensive or probably told him he needed a new machine. But since he understood the pattern he was looking at, when I was in Honduras, when I was in the Army, I was a vehicle mechanic. But I had a couple of times I helped the guy that was in charge of like the generators and the reefer vans and stuff like that with a problem because I understood engines. That's IQ. Can you take the thing you know about X and apply it to Y? A credential just means that you have a credential. You have, I want to be clear. There are brilliant PhDs, absolute brilliant PhDs. You know what they all have in common, though? None of them are the people like, actually, it's doctor, right? The one that says, actually, it's doctor has like a PhD in childhood education or something like that. Like Dr. Jill, right? Dr. Jill, she's a real doctor, man. Yeah, okay, whatever. The guys that are like astrophysicists, they're like, my name's Bob, man. Just call me Bob, right? You know, unless it's in an academic setting or something. But we can't live in a society that we think because somebody was blessed with a title that makes them qualified. This is what you know if you've ever run a business or if you've ever been in the business of training people brought into a business that requires some level of education to get into. The new person that you hire out of college never knows anything. Tech school is the same. They never really know how to do the job. They have a fundamental background understanding of what's involved and a context. But they all have to learn their job after they get there. If it just thumbs up from anybody in the live chat that ever had to train somebody that was highly educated but had not worked before. I'm not saying there was anything wrong with them or that they were stupid or they weren't even a quick study or quick learn. Don't you have to teach? Like anybody had to do it. Just put your thumb up for me in a live chat. Do you have to like teach this person the most fundamental basics of the actual job that they just spent 4 years and $100,000 or more on learning how to do, but they don't really know how to do anything? I love my niece, right? She has a degree in poultry science from Texas A&M University. She's a very smart girl, by the way. I'm not putting her down. I mean, I'm her godfather, not just her uncle. I love her. Okay. But when we were listening to her and her friend talk about poultry, my wife turned to me, and my wife loves her too, man. Dear to God, love this chick. Like, this has nothing to do with her. This is about a degree. My wife turns to me and goes, we know more about chickens and ducks and geese than they do. Yeah. And there's a lot of shit they know that we don't, to be fair, on a commercial operation and things like that, large scale, you know. But it's just, it's the case that all these people, they come in to a workplace after spending $100,000 off and more for an education. And the first thing you have to do is actually teach them how to do their job. So the credential itself can't be a value. The experience along with the education, plus the quality of the experience once you start applying your knowledge, that's what rates expertise to me and normal, sensible people. Another thing is, people have been taught to be proud of who they are versus what they accomplish. You know, I'm a proud woman, right? You know, dude, that's a big thing now. Women, it's a woman company run by women. Doesn't mean anything to me. Don't care. Doesn't mean anything to me, I don't mean it is a negative. I mean it's a neutral. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. If I want porta potties delivered to my west pasture so that the people coming here in a few weeks that have to live on my property for half a week have a place to shit, I don't care who owns the company. I want functioning porta-johns delivered on the day that it was promised and picked up and taken the hell out of here. I don't give a shit what your name is. I don't care what you look like. I care that you get the damn thing Done. Your identity means nothing to me. Why? I'm a rational person that wants to get things done. But no. Now it's like important where the person's from, what their sexuality is, what their gender is, what their chosen gender is, you know, what color their hair is, how many times they pick their butt in the morning. There's no limit to this. How many things it will make the identity of the individual more important than the capability of the individual. The entire DEI nonsense could not exist without this mindset. It would fall on its face. Nothing was necessary to fix the unfair components of society, because we did have some. You know, companies that just wouldn't hire a person because they were female, wouldn't hire a person because they were black, wouldn't hire a person because they were foreign born, wouldn't hire a person because they were gay. It's a one freaking sentence law. You shall not discriminate based on, and a laundry list. And anybody that gets proven to have done it gets their ass fried. That's it. No. We have programs, and you have to hire at least this many. And like, there ain't this many of these people with this certification in this industry because they're not interested in it for whatever fucking reason it is. Well, now it's your fault. You need to go make them interested in it. I mean, there are differences among just the races as a whole, for instance. And what I mean by this isn't that nobody in race X wants to do skill Y. I'm just saying that of X, there's a lot less percentage of them interested in skill Y than in skill Z. Or the sexes. You notice that the sex thing, right? We don't have enough women in science. Maybe women don't want to do that kind of fucking science. Just like they don't want to drive garbage trucks. Just like they don't want to plumb toilets. Just like they don't want to drive the shit truck that's going to come get the porta potties. And the shit truck is going to come pump the shit out of the porta potties on Friday so that you guys aren't sitting on top of a mound, right? When there's that many people using Six Johns, right? Like, they don't want to do that job. No one gives a shit that they don't want to do that job. But they give a shit that they don't want to do these other jobs. It's cherry-picking nonsense. And you can't have a functional society this way. Markets market, right? And that includes who does what. The shittiest work that requires the least amount of skill will always be done by the people with the least amount of skill who most need any work whatsoever to get a start in life. The shittiest jobs that pay really, really well will be done by the people who are willing to do the shit and develop the skill because that's the way they can make the most money. That is another side of the market economy. The market economy isn't just how much you pay for apples versus how much you pay for peppermint candy. It's the labor side of the equation too. And you can't make people who don't want to do a thing even if they're capable of it. I have enough intelligence. If I wanted to be a fucking mechanical engineer, I could have been a mechanical engineer. Do you know what? I don't want to do it. Nothing could make me want to do it. I don't care what celebrity you put on stage dancing around with a chicken up his ass. I don't care. I don't want to do it. Why? Partly, there's other things to this, but partly because I do not like complicated mathematics. I can do it. I don't like it. You have to work hard. I don't want to. And I don't want something on the other side of it enough to go through it. That's like a crucible, right? Now, I wanted to be in the military. I wanted to be airborne, so I was willing to go through the shit to get that done because I wanted what was on the other side of it. Okay? If I didn't want it, I wouldn't have been willing to go through it. Just simple that is. But no, we're going to fix society. This is social engineering. This is why we're so fucked up. Nobody knows what they're actually supposed to do because everybody's being told to do something they don't want to do. Now, there's a place for doing things you don't want to do. But it's not in how you plan your life. It's not in where your goal lies then. We need more women in science and math and engineering and technology, STEM. Why? Why? Diversity is our strength. That's a catchphrase. Another problem we have, catchphrase society. Why? How will diversity strengthen our development of technology if we have more women in STEM degrees? So far, it hasn't actually done anything. So you have nothing to base it on. You're just now. What do I think about the woman with a talent for mathematics and engineering who wants to go to school to do that? Good for her, man. Great. Cheer her on all the way. Help her. Help her be successful. But don't try to jam people into that because you think we need it. We will always have people willing to do what we need because we'll always be willing to pay for what we need, and therefore somebody will be willing to do it if it's possible. Need, not want, need. And then if you want it, whether you'll have it or not, is it possible, and are you willing to pay enough for it? If those two things are true, you'll have that too. You don't need to worry about who does it. The market will sort it out. If you look at any product, I've seen this done with a pencil, but you know, if you look at a product here, like I have a little EDC kit, right? This is made of nylon. Well, that was made somewhere. It's made of stitching. That was made somewhere. It was assembled somewhere. There's a little magnetic snap on it that holds it closed. That was made somewhere. This was probably made in 10 different locations in total by people that don't know each other, don't give a fuck about each other. And then somehow this was probably made in El Salvador. This was made in El Salvador. It had to get from El Salvador to the United States for Amazon to sell it to me. In the end, 100 people or more cooperated in some way so that I could buy this. And it was all done with nobody telling anybody what to do other than you work for somebody. So nobody had to say, hey, we need more people to make snappies. It's unnecessary. And we're not behaving normally in that society. We also have moved into a society where society actually believes the role of government is to keep us safe. Not to protect liberty. The only purpose of government should be to protect liberty. That's it. Now, this isn't even a political debate, honestly. Government in of itself, if you explain government to a society of people who have lived without government, it is the most horrifying look on a person's face you'll ever see. If you take like an indigenous tribal society where their government is basically, they all know each other and nobody fucks with nothing because you get your ass kicked if you fuck something up or steal. Right. And you start explaining things like, well, you won't be able to cut that tree down unless you get a permit and you have to pay for it. Oh, the water? Oh, you don't have water rights. Oh, you don't want people building another village right there? Well, too bad. We have eminent. You start explaining that to one of those societies and the look is absolute horror. Why do you think the Native Americans resisted colonizing so much? It was more the government than the people. The understanding that your way of life was over. You're sacrificing so much freedom in return for this thing called government. Yeah? That's what government is. In no way can government keep you safe. Government can discourage people from harming you, but it can't keep you safe. It's impossible. It's impossible. A very wealthy young man whose only crime was talking to people was recently shot in the head. And several people in my own audience, when I was talking about it on the air, said, why didn't he have Overwatch? Because he's not the fucking president, asshole. I'm sorry. And it's been some of these people I like. Charlie Kirk didn't get Overwatch. Why would he? Right. So if the government can't protect Charlie Kirk, if the government can let two guys with guns get close enough to the president of the United States to kill him, a former president at the time, then how is it going to protect you, Bill, Tom, Mary, or Susie, who lives in Sheboyganville? It's not. It's not going to protect you. Again, it can dissuade people because they know if I go into Mary's house and steal Mary's stuff and rape Mary, if I get caught, they'll put me in a place where men bigger than me will trade me for cigarettes and rape me, and I don't want that. But that's not keeping you safe. That's a deterrent. Keeping you safe would be you have security around you and somebody approaches you and they smack them in the freaking head. That would be keeping you safe. But yet we say it with a straight face and we mean it. It's a responsibility of a government to keep us safe. I'm telling you, in the 1980s, if you would have told that to like my granddad and my grandmother who were part of like the GI generation, they would have looked at you like you had a freaking tree growing out of your head and a freaking lizard crawling out of your other ear. That's how they would have, like, just this person does not need to be free in society. That's an asinine thing. Government keep you safe. But we believe it. So you can't function normally if that's what you expect of the state to keep you safe. Because that means you don't have to worry about all the other shit we talked about. Government's here to keep you safe. You don't have to worry about the drugs the doctor told you to take. They have trials for that. The government kept me safe. It must be okay. You don't have to worry about the quality of your food. The government keeps us safe. You see, have you ever thought about it that way? When they say that, you think of like terrorism or like people robbing your house. But when you go into the freaking reality of what the statement means, not the context in which it's delivered, but what it means when it becomes permeated through society, it means that anything that the government put its stamp on is okay and perfectly safe. Hey, man, they told us to put our seatbelts on. They're keeping us safe. You know, seeing your friend go through a window should have got that through to you, right? A cop pointing a gun in your face because you didn't comply with the law, that doesn't keep you safe. That actually puts you in far more danger than not wearing the fucking seatbelt. If you want, you know, at least I understand the speeding law. When I go ripping 80 miles an hour in a 40 mile an hour zone where kids play, I'm endangering my life and the life of others. When I drive down the highway at the posted speed limit without my seatbelt on, the person whose life I'm truly risking is my own. You have no right to tell me, and you don't have to make me, I'll do it. But you see my point. Government can't keep you safe. But that's the mindset. It's like seatbelt mentality. Without the government, we wouldn't have seatbelts. It wouldn't even exist. No one would have ever thought, hey, you notice how Bill, he got in a wreck, and he flew through the windshield, and he had a concrete wall, and his head exploded? Maybe we should do something to prevent that. No one would have ever figured it out. Only government would. It's just nonsense. And politics as a whole, guys, at this point, it's literally a 50-plus-year-old hell loop. It's the same cycles over and over again. The Republicans get elected, everything's their fault. The Democrats get elected, everything's their fault. The Republicans get elected, everything's their fault. And when you have split governments, both sides always claim the other side is why they can't do the things they need to do. And even when one side controls everything, they've got a majority in the courts, they got a majority in the Senate, they got a majority in the House, and they hold the White House, it's still the damn Democrats' fault that the government shut down, which, by the way, I forgot about until right now. I forgot the government was shut down. I don't care, by the way. Doesn't matter to me at all. Stay shut down. If something can stay shut down this long, you forget it happened, it's probably not necessary. So what do we do? How do we fight the current of stupidity? Not the current stupidity, the current, like a river, like a stream, like a tide, the current of stupidity. Number one, verify information and examine every side of every issue. You have to be a journalist because we don't have any journalists anymore. We have no journalists. There's no such fucking thing in this country inside what we call the media as a journalist. Now, there's people like me, and there's people I don't even like, but I would call them legitimate journalists. They actually are curious. They're actually trying to get the information. They follow the rules of journalism, which is you don't report something as confirmed unless you can get two sources on it. And if you have two sources on something, unless it's going to get somebody killed or something, you fucking report it. There's people like that. None of them work for Fox News, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, right? ABC News, Time Magazine, Vanity Fair, whatever, right? None of them work with People Magazine. Nobody in those organizations is actually what a journalist is. Because a journalist is somebody you say, this thing is true, and they pull it apart, they open it up, they look inside it, they talk to other people, they say, oh, what is this? You didn't tell me about this thing. How does this work? Where did this come from? Why is this here? What does it mean that it does this thing that it's doing right here? Those that are not in the video, you understand. Oh, this is made of titanium. It doesn't bend. Why doesn't it bend? Why would you carry around something that doesn't bend as an EDC tool? What does EDC mean? Right? That's a journalist. They like want to pick it apart. As much as it pains me to say this, they're like Jake Robinson. They ask question after question after question, and they don't stop asking until all the boxes that can be checked have been checked off, and then they report the details. You don't have that. Does not exist. If you believe that exists, you need to go to your doctor and ask him about a medical treatment for your mental illness. You have delusions. You believe in something not true. remix the 90s dance song, do a line dance, and take your mental medication because you are delusional. So you have to do the job. But here's the most important part. I've done whole shows on just this. But only if you actually care. Only if it will actually matter to you. You know how much time people spend worried about shit and doing shit that doesn't really affect them in life? That they don't even, they just think they care about it because they're emotional at the moment. Here's the reality. Life is not short. It's actually quite long. It only really feels short because we waste so much time that we're given. So even though I'm saying verify and examine every side of every issue, first question, do I care? And then how far am I going to go? Because how much do I, if I find out I'm wrong, what will I change in my life? The answer is nothing. It might not be worth the quest at all, unless you're just intellectually curious. If the answer is I would change where I live over this, right or wrong, you need to go down the rat hole on that one, man. You need to find out because you're making a major decision in your life over it. If it's about where you're going to put your money, where you're going to send your kids to school, what degree you're going to pursue, what career you're going to pursue. All right, for those of you that vote, okay, if it's going to change your vote. But will it? Will you really change your vote from orange to cackles if this thing turns out to be true? If it's not going to change your action at all, probably should spend your energy and your time on something else. Realize that 95% of what people think is important isn't. It isn't. It doesn't matter. Even things I talk about, a lot of them is not important. I only use it to teach pattern recognition. The Russian-Ukraine war. To your life and your country, not important. But the government sent so much money. Yes, I'm angry about it too. But if they didn't send it there, they would have pissed it away on something else. It's not like they would have, like, fixed homelessness with the money. You know, not that they can because they caused it. You could not ask the arsonist to put the fire out. I'm sorry. But it doesn't really, it doesn't matter. If Russia takes the Donbass, your life won't change. If Ukraine gets it back, your life won't change. The price of your rent won't go down. The cost of a gallon of gasoline won't move by much. And if it does, it won't be for very long. None of it will really matter. You've just been lied to. Even if Cackles had been president, I'm going to tell you some things would be worse. But in the end, the people winning would still be winning and the people losing would still be losing. At the every person level. Not necessarily at the political elite level. That's a different, that's the mafia war. Make your life a series of learning projects. If I ask you, what new thing are you learning about right now and you don't have an answer? You know that quote I gave you about it's not that life is short, it's that we may waste so much of the time we're given? That's you. What are you excited about? Now, it's okay. Every once in a while, you take a break. Be bored for a week. It's okay. Go sit in the woods and contemplate your butthole. I don't care. Like, that's fine. There's mental, we are, one of my laws of life, right? Everything is a battery, including you, and batteries need maintenance and recharging. But in general, if you're not in that mode, I don't care what projects you're working on at work. I don't care how upset you are about the cost of tea in China. I don't care. There should be something you're learning about that you didn't know about before. And it can be a hard skill. It can be a soft skill. It can be a generalized knowledge. It can be reading a book that's fiction, but actually is teaching things inside of it. It can be doing research. It can be learning how to tan a hide, reload a shot shell, tend a garden, make compost, catch a fish, bake bread, cook a steak. Something you didn't know how to do. If you end a week, and at the end of that week, there's nothing that you know that you didn't know at the beginning of the week that has some practical value, you just pissed away 7 days of your life. Again, I'll make allowances for the contemplation and the recharging. Here's the thing, though. You can't even do that. And actually, you might do some of your greatest learning then, because all the shit that went in your head over here that you never processed, funny thing is when you kind of blank out and relax and let go, all of a sudden, tell me it doesn't happen to you. The mind starts piecing things together. I think my mind is weird at the hyper level it does that at, but I don't think anybody's immune to it. I know that, like, one of my most miserable times in my life when I was in the corporate world was when my partner Neil got on an airplane for more than 12 fucking hours. Because I knew that motherfucker was going to, I'm sorry to use that word, but it's the only word I have for it. I love the man like a brother, but I knew his fucking ass was going to land, and immediately when he's in his car going wherever the hell he was going, get on the phone with me and want to change the whole damn company. Because when he was disconnected, he couldn't control anything. All the shit that went in his mind, brain dumped. He was an eccentric, so there was no filter. He wanted everything done now, and it's like, we can't do that. I was like, it was a great partnership because I was like the only person in the world could tell him, no, Neil, we're not fucking doing that. When you get back, if you still feel this way, we'll research how to implement these things. But I cannot change five programs in 5 minutes because you had an epiphany on an airplane. And that was his superpower and his weakness. And I thought sometimes I'm the same way. But I think there is always, in all people, there is that place where when you shut down, it's like dreaming in a way, but like a waking dream. When you have a weird-ass dream, you know, generally it symbolizes something. I don't want to go into it because there is family that listen, and they might know I'm talking about them. But I'm not going to say it, right? But I'll just tell you that I had a dream, and my wife was in it, and she had done a thing that I was not happy about. And I was asking her about it in a dream and asking her what we had to show for it, and the answer was nothing. But when I examined the dream, I'm like, oh, so that wasn't you. That was somebody else. So we won't name that person or tell you what it was. And it's not a bad thing. It's just like it might ruffle a feather or three, right? You know, there's no reason. There's no gain for me to do that. But it had nothing to do with her. It wasn't her. She was just the symbol of it in that dream, you know, for whatever reason my mind was processing it that way. And I think when we take those pauses, we take the walk in the woods, we sit under the tree, we get the fishing rod in our hand, right? We read a book under the trees. We sit out on the deck and look at the stars. We take a vacation on a ship in the middle of the ocean. Any of those things, when you're not learning, you're still learning because you don't even know what you learned. And your mind starts piecing those things together. But you need to be a lifelong learner, and I mean really a lifelong learner. There should be something, you know, if there's not four big new things in your life every year, like one a quarter, what are you even doing? What are you even doing? I mean, the things that my grandparents could do amazed me, really, when I think about it now. Like my grandmother on my Ukraine side, she painted these eggs every year with wax. Like you make holes in the eggs and you blow them out and you do like this wax painting of these. They look like they belong to the museum. That generation took time to learn that kind of skill set. She didn't make any money doing it. She didn't sell it to anybody. She gave a few away, but mostly it was just for our own home. I never even thought about it, honestly, until right now. But what happened to the ones that she made every year? I don't even know, because she made new ones. There seemed like there were some around from the prior years, but it seemed like most of them are made new every year. They learned skills like that. That woman knew how to bake bread. She knew how to make pierogies, right? She knew how to grow a garden. She didn't like to hunt, but she knew how to prepare game. The only problem she had with cooking was meat. She overcooked all meat. And that was because of old school. She lived in a world where there was no refrigeration. They were afraid of meat being undercooked back then. But you need learning projects. Projects. This, I'm going to start learning how to X. And I'm going to become proficient at X. And then I'm going to go learn Y. We used to have a website called 13skills.com. Maybe we should bring that back someday. All right, next up. Challenge your children and teach them to challenge you back. You should be your child's first and best teacher. And hopefully, as a couple, you fill that role collectively together. You should be the finest teacher that your child ever has. And that means that even at the point that if you have a kid that's a gifted kid, and by the time they're 16, they're legitimately smarter and know more than you do, you still know things they don't, and you can still guide them in their learning. And this requires challenge in both directions. This is what I always said about teaching. If you do not challenge your students, you are a shitty teacher. If your students do not challenge you back, you are a shitty teacher. And if you can't teach in such a way that your students put what you teach them into action to the point of replicating the teaching with somebody else, that they don't get so excited about something they learn from you that they go teach somebody else how to do it, you are a shitty teacher. Which means that 90% of our teachers in public ed are terrible teachers. And it's not they're bad people. And it's not that they don't have the potential to be great teachers. They're in a system that is systematically designed to prevent everything I just said. What school is it okay for a student to challenge their teacher in today? That used to be college. That's not even true anymore. But let's just go K-12. You tell me where it's okay for a kid, let's say ninth grade, told something by a history teacher or a science teacher to say, Mr. or Mrs. Smith, what have you. I've actually researched this event or this thing, and I have found that what we commonly accept as being true doesn't seem to be true. Well, that's different because that's you, isn't it? Somebody said homeschool. But about school is not true. Even if the kid's wrong, you know what that teacher should say? Johnny, that is fantastic that you've investigated that on your own. Let's examine it together and determine if what we're teaching you is correct, what you believe is correct, or if the truth lies. Let's do that as a class. Let's go on a, holy effing crap. What a great opportunity to really teach, to lead learning. I was having some conversations. Jared Haley was here this weekend to help us out with some stuff, and we went down to the Dome Home place and looked at the Dome Homes and all. It was pretty cool. And we were having a conversation about leadership. And I said, you know, one thing I've always said is if you're leading me, I should see your back and your shoulders, not your face. Yeah? If you're in my face, you're driving me. If I see your back and I'm following you, you're leading me. Teachers are supposed to be leaders. And so you need to be challenging your children to teach them because no one else is going to. But you also need to give them the ability to challenge you back. Do as I say, not as I do. No, it doesn't work. Now there's times like we gotta get this done. A toddler that doesn't want to put a shirt on, do you want the dinosaur shirt or do you want the turtle shirt? I don't want a shirt. Okay, shirt's on, out the effing door. Okay, I get that. Right? I even get that in public school at some point. Say, we gotta move on. But in general, when a student challenges a teacher, instead of being offended, the teacher should be excited. Because they're either found a student so motivated that student is going to teach them. Or they found a student so motivated that they're craving being convinced of what the truth really is. Right? I know there's smart Alex and troublemakers. They're easy to see, Jake. Anyway, I gave him a good one, so I had to give him a dig. Next, you need to develop your pattern recognition. I've talked about that a lot, so I'm not going to go deep into it. But you should be able to see patterns. Here's a pattern you should be able to see every time it comes up, instantly. Any fucking headline, comma, any fucking group of idiots say. Right? Blah, 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 comma, experts say. Blah, 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 study suggests. Blah, 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 commentators speculate. Blah, 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 comma, blah, blah, blah. That is always going to be bullshit. When you read the article they publish, if you read beyond the headline, it will basically admit that the headline was bullshit or misleading. You know, like here's a perfect example of a headline being true but bullshit. Experts say, okay, I don't have an English degree. Counting for delay, I need some help from my audience today. What does adding an S mean to a word like expert? What does it mean once we add an S to it? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I never went to college, but I think that means it's plural, multiple, right? Okay, now, correct me if I'm wrong. The minute you go from one to two, that's when we add the magical S. So if I have one person who people call an expert, it's expert says, right? But if there's two, experts say. Is that correct grammatically? Is that grammatically? It is. I think it is. Anybody that thinks I'm wrong, I'll back up. But just give me a thumbs up or tell me, yeah, you got it right. All right, okay. So if I write this article, you know, so-and-so food may cause cancer, comma, experts say. To write that in a way where I'm legally safe, is telling the truth, I just need two people that I can plausibly claim I believed were experts who had consensus. That's all I need. Now, what does Dark Horse says? I have to have more than one to be plural. I think we're all on the same page here, right? Okay. Let's examine that, though. In the headline was the word may. Not actually claimed anything. May cause cancer, experts say. Now, experts. What exactly makes them experts? Who says they're experts? Where do I apply to be considered an expert in something I am an expert in? I would say that I probably could be considered an expert composter. I know a dozen different ways to do it, and I make excellent compost in all 12 ways, and I can explain the biological and chemical processes by which it occurs, right? You could tell me why your compost isn't working. You can tell me what you did. I can tell you, I don't know a way that I could be more of a, you know, could I be a bigger expert or a better expert? Yes, but the minimum qualification for whatever would be expert in that field, but am I an expert? The media call me an expert, right? You know, I know some people that I would call expert mechanics that ain't me. One of them was just here, Charles. I saw him in the talk, right? That's an expert mechanic, but is he an expert? But the media decides it. So you have the subjective nature of whether this person actually is an expert. We only need to have two of them. We only need the inference that there's a consensus among these nebulous experts, and we couched it with may. When I read that headline, I know I can pick it apart with its own article that follows it, but it goes back up to the very beginning where I said, what? Know everything about the issue, right? If it even matters to you. Since I don't care about it, at that point, I've already made a decision. I don't need to worry about this. Now, if it was something that I know I'm going to get a lot of questions from you guys about, or it would change my life if they had to be right, I'll investigate it. But I already am, it's tainted right out of the gate because of the way it came across, because that's the pattern. That's the pattern. Learn to work systems to your advantage. We've talked a lot about the problem with the systems, and I don't like the word the system. If there was a system, we could destroy it, break it, and deconstruct it in a week. We have systems. And those systems have been designed by sociopaths and psychopaths. And there is extreme redundancy in those systems. You know, when Amazon Web Services go down, half the internet goes down. That's what happened today, by the way, if you couldn't get any of your services to work. AWS was down. Even Amazon didn't work for a while today. You couldn't look up a product. And that's why I don't have an item of the day officially for you today. I sort of have a recycled one because I couldn't even do it because Amazon wouldn't work. Right, so we don't have that redundancy. But when it comes to keeping people in line in society and keeping the social stratification of fascism in place, the real fascism, the actual fascism, you don't know what a fascist is. Well, I think fascism is a system of economics. Fascism is about control. Tell me a better way to control people than economics. They get more mad. Anyway, as I was saying, the textbook definition of fascism is a system that is either fully socialist or laissez-faire capitalist, but lies in between, where industry and the state see the divisions between the classes as an opportunity for both of them to get more of their goals accomplished and see themselves as mediators between those roles in the classes, and they collaborate to the benefit of both. That's exactly the fucking definition. That's the exact definition. I mean, that is fucking Wikipedia's definition, unless they changed it in the last 5 years, because I haven't checked, you know? So that's the fascist system. Guess what? I don't like it either. Guess what? That's what we live in. Why am I, in my 50s, close to being able to retire if I want to and live very comfortably for the rest of my life, including if I live till 90? because even though I don't like it, I accept that it exists, and I'm a pragmatist, and I know how to work the system. Now, that doesn't mean selling my soul. That doesn't mean becoming a politician. That doesn't mean, you know, selling out everything. But it does mean understanding, like, instead of, like, selling you a package on how not to pay taxes and going to prison, I have taught you for 17 years that 95% of the tax code is how you get out of the 5% that it says you have to do. And you need somebody like a Matt Sersley and a good CPA working with you to maximize that. That's working a system. We need to teach our kids to work systems. I literally designed systems for my son to work against me so he would learn the pattern of working a system. I had ways that he could stage things and do and not actually do some of his chores, but do just enough of the right ones, have just enough money to bribe some of his friends into doing some of them for him, and that I would match his paycheck in the equivalent of a 401k without him having to contribute to it. I even had a manual, had a whole 3-ring binder. I put 100 different ways that kid could game against me in that system to see if he would come up with any of them. Because that's how society works. That's how society works. Society is a system of systems. And in some ways, you need to learn to work those systems. Don't join a tribe, political or otherwise. Community, sure. Tribe, no. Modern tribalism is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the Apaches, right, or the Seneca or the Seminole. I'm talking about modern corporate tribalism, political tribalism. Once you attach yourself to an ideology or a brand or anything like that, you then are going to be put in the position of having to defend things that are not defensible. If you put a gun to my head on election day last year and said, orange or cackle? Orange. When orange won over cackle, I was a little bit happy. But I am not a MAGA. I am not a trumpeter. I am not a GOP believer. I am not in that political tribe. I am under no obligation to defend anything Donald Trump says or does. So when I actually say I understand why he's doing this, even though I think it's wrong, you're getting an honest opinion. When I'm like, this is actually probably the best thing you could do in this situation, or this is absolutely retarded, idiotic, stupid behavior that should never happen, I'm free to say any of that. Kind of like Randall Carlson knowing all about the Masons but never joining the Masons so he can talk about the Masons, because if he was a Mason, he can't talk about the Masons. Same type of thing, right? And I could do the same thing with the Democrats. I had no problem. I was going to say Biden, but I can't really think of anything good the man did. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm trying. And anything that I could try to give him as a pass, I think would have happened whether he was there or not. Barack Obama did some things I agreed with, and when he did so, I said so. He did a lot more that I disagreed with, but I said I disagreed with those. I had no loyalty. I can tell you that probably if we cut it off at Bush Sr., we don't include Orange Man, best president we've had, and that's so Bush, Clinton, Bush 2, Obama, Biden. Best president out of that group, Clinton. Oh, my God. What? He did all these bad things. I know. I'm talking about the total overall map because I don't have an affiliation. Just simply because if I was like on this show every day saying, you got to get out, you got to vote, you got to vote Republican, conservative values, small government, and took all of the GOP marketing that they don't mean, and I marketed it as myself and I bought into it, I can't say that. I could never say that. If it shocked you when I said that, you haven't been paying attention for 17 years. I started this show. Bush Jr. was still president when I started this show. I've been pretty clear over the years. I don't know if there is anybody that I hammered in the head and shoulders harder since I started this show than George Bush Jr. Now, I can think of some I would, but they weren't president at any time during it. Right? Biden, I almost felt bad hammering him. It was like he's a potato salad. He doesn't even know where he is. He doesn't know what day it is. Biden was a case of elder abuse. See, I can't say that if I'm tribal either, right? I got to like, oh, Democrat, bad. They're all bad. Every politician's bad. Every politician is a person that wants power over people that they shouldn't have power over. Nobody runs on, well, the people that do run on always get attacked by both sides. Rand Paul and Thomas Massie would be your two unicorns there, right, that are currently in a federal office that actually want less power for government, less taxes for real in total, less authority in your life, less interference in your life. Everybody else wants more. You can't be tribal with that. You can't. Well, you can, but it's just not good for you. You'll never break free. Determine the things you want most and put 95% of your effort into getting those things. Did you see what so-and-so did? Okay. Tell me how knowing about this will get you more of the things you most want in life. Blank stare. Especially if you're young. You should somewhere have a notebook, little notebook or a card or something pinned up on a wall, or maybe it's your screens, something. The 10 things you most want in your life. Whatever they are. CEO by 35. First million by 29. Whatever, I don't care. A house. Paid for house. A house in this place. You know? An education of. The ability to. I don't care. I'm not telling you what it, you know, be debt free. I don't care what it is. These are just random ideas. By the way, you have AI today, and you could actually help yourself really dial that listing. But you should have that. You should have that. You should look at it every day, a couple times a day. And all you should say to yourself is, self, how is anything that I've been doing today with my time, anything I've spent more than a minute on, helping me get to one of those places? And if the answer is it's not, stop fucking doing it. Now, I'm not a prude. Obviously, playing video games, unless your goal is to become like a world-renowned gamer, is not going to get you your goal. Okay? And if you don't have enough talent, innate talent and ability to actually get there, because it's harder than people think, I know that, then you're also just bullshitting yourself, right? Realistic goal is what I'm doing, helping me achieve that goal. If the answer is no, stop doing that. Break time, et cetera, reflection time, we already covered that. In general, the thing you're actually spending, like, you could be doing these other things and you're not. Well, I'm doing it because my boss says I have to do it and it's work. You better figure out how your job channels you into one of those things, or get a new job or a different profession. I have to pay the bills. Then this job should be temporary. And one of the things on that list should be a job that helps me get the other 9 fucking things on the fucking list. Why didn't they tell you that in school? Do you know why I got mad right there when I said it? Because it just occurred to me how fucked up it is. You lock a kid in a fucking classroom for 13 fucking years, from the time they barely learn to wipe their ass and blow their nose and tie their shoes, 5 years old, till they're a young adult, free to go buy a gun, vote, smoke a cigarette, get a tattoo on their ass, or have their dick cut off. You lock them in a room for 13 years to educate them. And at no point does anybody in that institution ever tell them the thing I just told you right there. If your job does not advance the things in your life that you actually want to achieve, then one of the things on the list needs to be a job that will. That is so basic. That is so primal. That is so simple that it is, I don't use this word often, it is sinful that we do not teach our children that. It is as sinful as not teaching them how to cook their own fucking food. It's just as bad. It might be worse. Sooner or later, you will get hungry enough and you will learn how to cook your own freaking food. You will go to the freaking YouTube and watch whoever they changed the name of the Brothers East Green guy into some new channel when his brother left, right, about how to make food for $5 a week. You'll figure it out. But what I just said about that, I bet there's 50, 60-year-old people listening to me today that were like, man, he's pissed. But then they thought about it and went, holy shit, I didn't do that yet. And if I didn't say it right then, you wouldn't have ever thought about it. You would have never even had that thought. You'd never even realized. I spend 8 hours a day, sometimes 10, 12 hours a day working overtime to make that money. I don't even have a list of 10 things. But I can tell you right now, if I made a list, this is not getting me anywhere near it. And it doesn't always mean get a new job. What's the most important question to ask yourself? Come on, folks. What do I always tell you? What is the most important? The first word of the most important type of question. You tell me, is it who, what, where, when, or how? No, it is not what. It's not why. There it is. It is how. If this job does not help me get the other things on my list, how can it? Am I just channeling the income in the wrong direction? Am I not doing the things I need to advance in it to a place that I can lateral my ass over to somewhere else? Am I not taking all the opportunities in it to build up my experience where I can pad my resume and claim the things that I did 10% of the time for the things I did 90% of the time because I know when I go to the next place I can do those things? Or is there no way? Is there no way? Is this nothing but treading water? Then I better start looking for a fucking life raft. And I better start designing one. I better start thinking hard. How do we not teach children this? Anybody out there that, if you think that what I just said isn't a sin of society, that we never teach children that, let me know. I'd like to know. I won't flame you. I would like to know your logic to how that is not literally sinful behavior. Don't make it religious, though. You could change the word sin to something else. Just make it equally bad, right? Abhorrent behavior. Here's the other thing. This is going to be hard for some of you. This is straight out of my book. If you have someone in your life that you spend significant time with, the person when you're not working, you spend time with them. You talk. You have that friendship, that kinship time. If there is nothing in them that you can look at and go, I aspire to be more like Bill or Tom or Frank or Sue or Mary a little more in this one or two ways, stop spending time with them. You don't have to be a dickhead. And when I say stop spending time, I don't mean that you can't ever talk to them again. I don't mean if you happen to be related to them that you don't go to Thanksgiving because they're there. That's liberal tribalism that does that, okay? That's what that is. That's different. It's not what I mean. What I mean is you spend time with them on a regular basis. If you can't look at that person and say, you know what, they are a lot more willing to listen to other people and understand their life and have sympathy for them than I am, and I would like to be more that person. If you can't find that, they're a lot more astute as a business person than I am, and I would like to be a more astute business person. They're a lot more dedicated to learning than I am, and I would like to be more dedicated to learning. They're a lot more accepting of children than I am, and I would like to be more like them in that way. It sounds like an elitist, high bar, snobby thing, doesn't it? But when you break it down at that level, it's pretty low bar. Because here's why. You show me a guy with a beer belly, who drinks too much, has a reasonable income but no money, the people he spends with time with are his drinking buddies. And I'm not going to go through 10 vices, but I could. The guy that's always broke, but he has a good income, but he's just not drinking too much. There's some other way he's pissing his money away, and his friends do the same thing. When I got out of the Army, I had a good friend named Brad, and he was the guy that actually got me to move to Texas. And his mom was on like her fifth husband or fourth husband or some shit. And this man was probably in his 40s. He was into playing Battletech. A little fucking, like, it's like, I don't know, it's like sci-fi modern version of freaking Dungeons and Dragons. Which, that's fine. Again, I judge. But then I realized, like, this dude, like, every weekend, him and his buddies all got together like they were fucking 15 years old in a basement playing fucking Battletech. Like, and a good guy was going nowhere in his life. He became, you know, ex-husband number 4 or 5 pretty soon after that. You can't be that person. right? Unless your goal in life is to have a store that sells that shit, then that works for that guy, right? But like, you are not advancing your life if that's what you're doing. And you'd be like, Jack, you know, you fish, and like, yeah, but my life's together. Again, I would have not had a problem with it, like, if this guy did anything else. But even as a 21-year-old kid, you know, I thought I was a man, but you're a kid when you're 21. I thought, what a loser. Because he bitched about not having money, because he bitched about not being able to get ahead. I'm like, you're not doing anything. You're painting fucking mechs, whatever the fuck that is. As a 40-something-year-old married man with two stepsons, like, what the fuck are you even thinking? And my buddy's little brother was like 14 at the time. What example? Like, he took him to play. Like, do something with your life. If that's part of it, fine. But that was it. And all his friends were Peter Pans. They never, the little boys, the lost boys that never grew up. You can't be that way. Not if you want to get something out of your life. Then, my biggest law for you, of all my laws of life, believe whatever you want, but by God, know why you believe it. It's amazing to me how many people emphatically, emotionally tell me about something that's so big of a deal in their life, especially in the politics world. But if you ask them two or three questions, it always results in them exploding into anger. People who have answers to questions don't explode into anger. Do that. There's no reason to explode into anger. If you told me something and I said, well, how does it work? And you have the answer to that question, a logical, reasonable person would then explain how it works. They wouldn't call you a fascist. Yeah, Kevin says, like all the protesters, exactly what I'm thinking of at this moment. But there's many examples of it. That's just a very current one. That's why I say stay away from tribalism, because it creates that. The need becomes the leader says X is true. I must say X is true, even if I don't know why. It's true, right? So when somebody asks me why it's true, I go into cognitive dissonance, because I have now not only said it and feel the need to believe to defend it, I said it so much that I believe it. If you say something 20 times on 20 different occasions, you will reprogram your neural pathways to where even if innately you know it's bullshit, you will begin to believe it. The human mind is that malleable. Somebody else telling you it might take 100 times. 7 touch rule, by the way, in marketing, for you to remember it. Coke, the real thing, right? Yeah. Nike, just do it. 7 times, you'll remember it. There's a board game you can play with brands and logos. Most 8-year-old kids know all the answers, right? Not hard. But for you to believe something, in absence of proof, will take about 20 times if you're saying it to yourself or saying it to somebody else, or about 100 times of being told it without any sort of psychic defenses up, and you will internalize it as being true, especially if it comes from someone you trust. It can be a lot less times. So these people identify in these groups, they're told something, they internalize it, they believe it, but they do not know why they believe what they believe. So that's why they naturally respond in anger and violence when somebody asks a simple question like, well, how does it work? They don't know. I've done my research on climate change. Really? Do you know what the IPCC is? No. Well, you haven't done your research. That's the governing body of the, you know, United Nations that puts out all the information that you say you've researched and believe. Or if they do know, what are the 4 feedbacks in the climate model? They get mad. Well, you couldn't have researched it. Because you if you don't know that model, you don't know the theory by which it works. You believe it because a celebrity said so. That's not a reason to believe something. I don't care how many people said it. That's not a reason to believe something. I'm not telling you to believe what I'm telling you. I'm not even taking a side right now. I mean, most of you guys know where I come down on this. I'm not going to deny it. That would be dumb. know, there's 17 years of proof that I would be lying. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to do that. But right now, I'm not taking a side. I'm just saying you can't know this thing if you don't know these things. You can't know why you believe it. Your answer to why you believe it is because everybody says so. You know, when you were a little kid, everybody told you a fat guy with a beard like this brought you presents, everybody, and you believed it. But you had no proof, no evidence. You had actually more proof and evidence for that than you do for this bullshit that you believe now. Believe what you want. Just have enough courage, fortitude, backbone, and intellectual curiosity. If you're going to go around talking about it and making decisions your life based on it, to research it to the point where you know why you believe what you believe. Yeah, this is important too. This is in my book. I actually give the full quote behind this. Repeat the lie often enough and it becomes the truth. You don't know where that came from. Look it up yourself if you don't know. Very high-ranking scumbag. We're very past totalitarian regime. Who was the minister of propaganda. But see, the thing is, if you repeat a lie long enough and loud enough and often enough, it becomes the truth. Even if it's something horrible. What about when it's something people want to believe? What about when it's something people want to believe? What about when it's an encouraging message about the children being our future and every child going to college? Oh, now you've added something to the formula. When it's loud enough and long enough and frequent enough to work with something that is inherently evil, even if the thing still is evil, but it has the preface, it is velvet covered, the metal glove that you're getting punched in the face with that's coated in velvet. When it sounds good, man, that really works. But it can't work on a people who know why they believe what they believe. Because when that person who almost everything in their life, they have a foundational knowledge underneath their belief system. When they're presented a new piece of information that conflicts with what they already know, they say, hold on. Okay. There's a glitch in the matrix, right? There's somebody making a claim that I've never heard made before. I don't know whether they're right or wrong yet. Now, if they're a lunatic, I might just write them off. If it's not important to me, I might write them off. But assuming that they seem overall, you know, like they have sufficient mental capacity to understand the words coming out of their own mouth, and there's any plausibility in it at all, and it might affect my life one way or the other, it might change what I say or what I do or how I act, I need to know. So then you go, okay, let me examine this. And let me examine it like I'm on the debate team in high school, and they told me my subject of the debate, but not what side of the debate I'm on. I'm going to show up Friday and debate the other party, and neither of us know what side of the debate we got, and I have to be able to hold my own in a debate. I have to be the I have to be the defense attorney is a better, more ethical thing. The defense attorney willing to give a good, solid defense to somebody even though I know he's actually guilty. Because it might not even be to get a not guilty. It might be to mitigate the punishment, to get them the best possible outcome, right? And I have to be informed to do that about both. I have to know what the prosecution holds. That's why discovery is important. I have to know what evidence they have, where they got it. I have to be able to go talk to that prosecutor on behalf of my client. I have to listen to my client. I have to have at least some willingness to believe my client. That's why we have attorney-client privilege, because I really do need to know what really happened. And then I need to go be the best advocate I can. Or the debate. I need to be able to know, like, do seatbelts save lives? Well, everybody knows they do. I don't know. I might show up and they might say, you're on the anti-seatbelt side of this debate. Fuck, I don't believe this. But I still have to know enough to be able to come up with something. You do that with every issue that you really care about, it will become impossible for you not to. When new information is presented, even if you have a new knee-jerk reaction, if you go, wait a minute, this actually is something that I care about that will have some effect in my life, and I actually don't really know. It will be impossible. And I mean, it will be absolutely impossible for you not to figure it out. You don't have to play their games. That's the big lesson. So don't. You are a free being on this planet. I'm going to switch into a little bit of a belief system here versus facts for just a moment, because I have to speak from a belief system here because I can't prove what I'm about to say. My belief is that this body of ours is a shell, that we in the end are spiritual beings. All of you that are religious, no matter what your religion is, none of you should actually have a problem with that. And even many people that fancy themselves atheists tend to actually believe what I'm saying. We are energetic beings. We are all absolutely sovereign to ourselves. The only thing we are not sovereign over is nature and whatever truly is above us. I am as sovereign over myself as Donald Trump is over himself. I'm as sovereign over myself as any king. I'm as sovereign as any president, any prime minister, any CEO. They may have means in this earthly plane that I don't from an economic standpoint. But as to sovereignty of my own being, I am as sovereign as you are, and you are as sovereign as I am. I might know things you don't, and you might know things I don't, but when it comes to us, my rights as a living being thing are equal to all. Not because the Constitution says so. Not because of some higher ideal. But because by the nature of what you are, that is what you are. So that's opinion. And it is from that standpoint that I come back to fact. If you assert your sovereignty, it works. The first thing you have to do is refuse to accept that you must take a side. That you must do something somebody else says. Well, I can do A or B. There's 26 letters in the fucking alphabet, and this is an alphanumeric system. Your choices are literally endless. It is the multiverse theory. Every time you make a decision, you splinter off of a different reality. Whether that's true or not, the decision-making points all the way through your life. 70 to 100 years is what most people get. Every place you make that decision, you do that as a sovereign being. I did it because they really wanted me to. No, no, no. You did it because they wanted you to, and it became important for you to do it for yourself because they wanted you to. You didn't do it because they wanted to do it. You did it because you chose to comply with what they wanted. That one piece of information changes lives forever. Once you accept it, you're always acting in your own self-interest. Sometimes you're wrong about it. Sometimes you make foolish or stupid decisions. And that's why we should go back to a society where not everything's protected and stupid hurts, because then we learn faster. The feedback is quicker. Life is a feedback mechanism if you let it be. I remember listening to a daredevil type guy, stuntman, one time, and they were asking about kids doing stunts, and they expected him to just say, no, I don't do it. But if you're going to be a stuntman, you got to start somewhere. And what he said is, well, don't go jumping off a building. Jump off a chair. Then jump off a higher chair. Learn how to fall. Jump off a table, you know. Then maybe look at like a deck. When it hurts, quit. Until you learn how, like, what do you, does this now, do you need an airbag? Did you land wrong? Did you need safety equipment you didn't have? But he's like, if you go slow, really, really slow, you'll learn your limits, and then you'll know when you need professional assistance or training to go to the next level. Basically, what he's saying was, I just told you, life is a feedback mechanism, and stupid hurts. So be careful when you're doing something you're not sure about, accept the feedback, and adjust as you go forward. That alone, that is how you truly understand your sovereignty. Because sovereignty doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want to without consequence. It just means that you can do whatever you want to and nobody can truly stop you. If you want to climb up a 10-story building and jump off of it, holding two feathers and saying, I can fly like this, and you really, 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 really want to, nothing short of putting you in a straitjacket in a mental institution because somebody knows you're going to do it will prevent it. You will do it. You will also plummet to the earth and you will die. Or if you survive, you may very well wish you didn't. The consequence is there, but you get to make the decision, which means in the end, everything comes back to you. With that, as I wrap up today, I didn't really think about it when I started the show, but this really is a good show for kind of pumping my book, Laws of Life by Jack Spirko, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. A lot of what we cover today is in this book, but specifically, believe as you wish, but know why you believe what you believe. And you should keep your true friends to people that you want to be a little bit more like, along with 14 other laws in this book. If you were thinking today, man, I know a kid, a young person, somebody in my life that I really believe could benefit from listening to Jack, but I don't think they'll sit down and listen to a two-hour podcast of just one man talking, get them this book. It's not very much money. They're worth it. Send them a copy. Oh, we're also getting to Christmas time, so maybe it'd be a good gift for somebody. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. Next up, like I said, I don't have a true item of the day for you guys today because Amazon literally didn't work until just before I went live today. It was kind of funny seeing, like, not just Amazon have problems, but everybody using AWS, which we don't. Yay, we have our own dedicated server, so we never even blinked during it. But the Anker Soundcore V20i open-ear headphones, they come in a little case. They hold charge for a freaking long time. Great sound, and they have the over-the-ear hooks on the earbuds. That means they don't fall off into duck shit, into a pond. Yes, both of those things happen to me. I don't like that. You know, I don't like having my earpiece fall into a duck poop pond. It's not fun. I don't enjoy it at all. And with the little hoop, it doesn't happen. I don't know if it's just me, but I have weird ears, and all of the little earbuds that go inside your ears always fall out. I can actually feel them almost working their way out. And for some reason, it's like 9 out of 10 times when one pops out, it's my left ear. They stay on my right ear pretty damn good. Might go all day. Left ear, it's going to fall out multiple times. These things have the sound, and they don't fall out at all. In fact, I used other ones for so long that I find myself at times feeling like, oh, that's right, I don't have to worry about it. Check these out because they're on sale for $24. I don't know how much longer they're going to be around, and these are going to be one of those deals that when it finally – the Anker's liquidating this product. I'm telling you right now, that's what they're doing. They're liquidating this product, and when it's gone, it won't be coming back. So get it now while you can. I didn't see any questions today with my one good eye, but I did get two super chats today. JD Drafts with $4.99. Bro, thank you for the gas money there. I appreciate it. And Hal Heim, I guess that's how you say his name, $2. I appreciate that, man. Thank you as well. Everybody tuned in today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Again, it was kind of a reboot, but I think if you go back and find the old original episode, it was totally different. It's the same but different, man, right? Who knows? Anybody know where that bread comes from? It's the same but different, man. It was the same but different. Now, tomorrow we'll be doing something totally different than this. Not the same but different. But totally different. Got a great interview lined up for you this week. Hakeem Anwar from Above Phone, Above Agency is going to come on and talk about personal privacy using the tools that they sell and things you can do for your privacy even beyond what they sell. Yes, it was Tommy Mick. Tommy. But that just made me think of Pinball Wizard. Different Tommy. Tommy Chong. Same but different, man. Beaners is the song. Beaners to the Batman tune. Anyway, Hakeem's going to be on. We're going to be talking about all the great stuff from Above Agency, the Above Phone, the Above Tablet, and the Above Book, and the things that you can do to improve your privacy and take care of your privacy in a world where people don't really even understand the value of privacy anymore. And then we'll have an expert counsel show, and we'll do all again next week. So we got a full week ahead of us. No interruptions planned anyway this week. Take care, guys, and I'll catch you tomorrow with another one. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.